We'll open our work meeting. It is the Lee Nellis Table of Uses Revision Development Standards Revision of Zoning Ordinances. So that's what we've been doing with this meeting, and we'll go ahead and open it up. Welcome, Lee.
Hello.
Everyone else.
And where the camera is more centered on me. Well, let me do a couple of small things first, just so that we keep track. One of which was that people were supposed to send me a list of terms from the commercial use standards that they thought needed to be defined, and I have not received any lists from anyone, so obviously that opportunity still exists. And, if you don't have a need for definitions, that's fine. But we want to make sure that those standards are set there. I want to go through the table of use issues here, which are pretty straightforward, and then if we have time to talk about the commercial standards checklist and the weighting of those standards that are relative in there. So I reviewed the work that was done on the table of uses and have a question or two. It cleans up some of the terminology related to daycare, which is very helpful. I think that is into various social service terms are cleaned up here. Gotten into sync with the way Utah law defines it at this point. I'll go back and check the statutes on those just to be sure, but it looks good to me. I have a question about the purpose in distinguishing between a campground and a developed campsite.
So what's the question, Leah, on that, the difference? Or?
Yeah, why did you guys decide you needed two different categories here?
I think one we're looking more for primitive, and I don't have the definitions in front of me right now.
Okay.
More of a primitive tent site camping,
mm-hmm.
and then developed would be more of an RV style. I think they're both in, but we wanted to have one or the other and not mix them up. Josie, do you have any, can you remember why we did that exactly?
She just rejoined. Oops. She just rejoined, so it'll take a second here.
Hey, do you have our copy here? Can you share the actual?
Yeah. Which one? Which document do you want to look
this
at?
Would be in their definitions in section 204.
That would be helpful. Sorry, I don't.
I have it too.
Which one of these files am I looking at here?
Okay. I'm trying to get them both out here so I can see them side by side.
Yeah, I have them too.
One's a doc. I think the second one, or the PDF, or the doc, the
6-8-2020.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of our logic on here was there were a lot of different designations in the beginning.
Right.
And we're trying to clean things up from a
mm-hmm.
RV park type thing to an actual campground. And then in the character of Boulder, a small tent campground is way different than something with RVs.
I agree that there's a difference. I'm just trying to make sure I understand what you think the difference is here.
Can you scroll down?
We've taken out the definition of campground entirely, and we've added developed campsite and then RV campground park, right? So,
yeah,
that's what happened. And then the developed campsite definition.
Oops. sorry.
I had a practical question on one of the pieces of that there, but I want to make a general point first once everybody's looking at the right piece here. There, good, that's good. There's developed camps.
Yeah,
okay. So before we get to the general concept, there are some practical things that I think you're going to run into enforceability issues with the, if I show up and I'm not pulling a travel trailer, but I'm pulling a U-Haul trailer, I've still got a pull behind trailer, and I can imagine somebody pulling into a campground and putting up a tent and still having a U-Haul. I'm not sure that you want to prohibit that per se. And 25 feet, so basically you're saying that you don't want any RVs in there, period.
Right.
Okay. Well, no, I just want to make sure that I'm clear here.
Yeah, and that's the difference, I think, between a campsite and then an RV.
Right. Okay, so...
A little more low-key.
Yeah. Right. No, I get that, and I don't have any issue with it. So the general point I want to make is that in all the other work that we've done so far, we are separating standards and definitions. And there are a whole bunch of good reasons for that in terms of how you create findings of fact and conclusions of law and in terms of how you defend ordinances. And so what I would like to do is to leave pretty much the first sentence in the definitions, developed camp size place used for overnight stay and an outdoor area for tent camping only. And then the rest of these are all actually standards, okay? Because you could write this differently. I mean, it could be, no less than 2 acres. You could say be no less than 5. You could say 10 campsites. There's all sorts of things in here that are changeable. The vehicle length. And then you say what the amenities are. That might go back into the definition, that part. But the things that are actually standards, which you can't be any smaller than 2 acres, can't be more than 8 sites per acre, okay. We're going to need to simply pull this apart. We don't have to really change anything that you suggested here. We just need to pull it apart and put the standards in with the commercial use standards and leave the definition as a definition. And the same goes for what you said about RVs.
Can I ask one question, please?
Sure, go ahead.
So if you cut this, what you're calling the standards out, you have your definition, but because it's in a commercial zone, then all those standards from the commercial zone apply
right,
to that.
Right, this would be added to those standards that you've seen, okay? Okay, so we're going to get all the definitions in one place, all the standards in one place. That way we can make a checklist, and the checklist portion for a developed campsite and RV park will be not applicable to other types of commercial uses, and that's no problem. But unless somebody else sees an issue with what's written here, I don't have any heartburn with any of it. I just want to get it reorganized to fit the rest of the organization. And RV parks, same thing. And I think that, so,
let's see, here we are. Yeah, probably a lot of standards in there.
Yeah, there are. And I'm trying to see if I have any questions, because, like, again, my reading of this is not, a critical reading in terms of what you guys came up with. It's just to try to organize that everything is consistent. So you're still allowing tent sites along with RVs, as I read this, right? And so the difference is that you could have a small tent campground, but in an RV park, you could still have tents.
Yes.
Which seems like the only practical, yeah.
Right.
Okay. And then we have mobile home parks and mobile home subdivisions, and you're saying that we need to do some work, additional work on the ordinance there. Which is true, but not hard to do in that particular case. So like I said, I don't see any reason to change anything. I just want to reorganize it. I think that you may get some pushback from anybody who wants to build an RV park on no more than 7 sites per acre, but if that's what you want, I'd say leave it that way, and that's how it is. And the minimum size, you've got a contradiction in here. Park area and space density. So there's two different versions of number 5. You've got one that's 5 sites per acre and one that's 7 sites per acre. We can have it be either way. We just need to eliminate one of those so they don't conflict.
I guess we could compromise and do 6.
That's fine, too.
I'm not sure what happened there. There's an email problem there.
This happens to me, too, because the stuff all begins to look alike after a while.
Right.
And so I have an eye for seeing the internal contradictions in these things because I've been doing it for so long. So they're good. The stuff on child care is good. We have a couple of definitions. I got one more question here, but I was trying to go in order. So on the guest ranch, and I have, again, this is not a criticism, this is just making clear, what you're saying is the guest ranch is essentially a use that's associated with a farmer ranch. It's not a separate, independent use.
Correct.
Okay. Have no problem with that. That's kind of in the traditional meaning.
Trying to avoid the dude ranch or sort of resort that has
the
destination only. And,
I think that. So did you have a specific reason for the 55 acres? That's kind of an odd number.
Part of it was looking at the land, the ranches that already exist. And part of it was avoiding smaller acreages in residential areas that, you know, if it gets too small, then as it was before, I think anyone with 5 acres or above could have done a guest ranch.
Yes, I think that's correct. And 5 acres really isn't a ranch. We'd all agree with that. There was really no good distinction between an ordinary motel and a guest ranch. And this makes a clear distinction the way you guys did it. So we can certainly incorporate that. Let's see. Oh, another one. The home mechanic, what we can do here is, again, keep a definite, I don't know if we really need to distinguish between minor and major home occupations, but we can talk about that, whether we do or don't. What we need is to move the no more than 2 automobiles or whatever are being worked on at a time into the standards. That's a standard, not a definition, right?
Is it, when you set that up, Lee, is it easy to read? I mean, how does that
Can you put the checklist up?
The checklist. The home occupation checklist. Right? Give me a minute.
So sort of like the table of uses now, you have the definitions, you have the zoning, and you have the standards.
Oh, wait, right. You mean the...
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, we'll let give Peg a minute here to put the standards up and talk about how this would work.
And typically that's how other towns do it. They have those sort of 3 categories.
It gets to be a problem when you have standards in the definitions. We also, as you guys probably know from working on this, there's actually 2 different places in the ordinance where there are definitions. There's a chapter called Definitions. And then there are these definitions that you all were working on that are hooked to the table. And, you know, you can find them. The question is whether that's confusing to people to have definitions in two different places. And we might want to talk about just putting all the definitions in one chapter, and that way when I'm looking for definitions, if I'm a stranger to the system, I can find them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, have you got the checklist there?
Not yet.
Did we lose Peg? There.
No, I'm not.
I think she's working on that.
Wait, I'm she's muted. Not. Wait. Okay. I'm working on it.
Okay.
But
I don't have to rush you.
This, I don't have a chart. My problem is my naming conventions aren't super clear.
Well, just as an aside, I think our hardest thing putting this together was the organization, so I appreciate your eye on that.
I really, most of this is just fine in terms of the decisions you made about what you want to allow and not allow. We just need to organize it in a way that it will work better in practice.
Okay, I've got a screen. Oh, stop sharing, new share. Hold on, I've got a screen. I'm not sure it's the right one, but take a look.
Well, we'll see.
Internet is super mega way slow, so there's a long pause here.
So, yes. Okay, so this review worksheet. Okay, so this is, there'll be more than one of these, okay? The one you're looking at here is the one for home businesses. And so you will see there's examples. Can you go right back up to the top, please, Peg? Yeah, so we have a series of columns here. Some of these standards are absolute. You have to meet it or not. Some of them are score, and you have to add up to a positive score. And then over here at the far right is what you would, where you would fill in the blanks looking at a specific project. So that's the general layout of this thing. The main thing to remember is there's both absolute and relative standards, mostly absolute in Boulder's case. And if you see here, this is a perfectly good one to have up given what I'm talking about. As it stands in the draft that we have right now, these are the standards for a home business. And we don't distinguish between a major and a minor the way you did, and we can talk about that. But I just will very quickly whip through here. So the very first thing about a home business is the owner has to live there, right? Otherwise, it's not a home business. Okay, so if they can't meet that, then none of the rest of this is going to make any difference. Then we said, and the way we have it, is that the space that they're allowed to occupy is a little bit bigger in the GMU zoning district than in the low density and other residential zoning districts. And again, we can talk about that. We felt that there are more agricultural-oriented types of things in the GMU are going to be on larger parcels of land, and that, again, 1,500 square feet is still not a particularly large space. So this is a little more liberal than what you guys had done, but it's in the same ballpark.
And so you're not using, I think we had a percentage of the household.
Yeah, if somebody makes an addition or changes things, it's easier just to meet your square feet, right? So I try to keep things as easy to measure as I can. We can put it in a percent if you want. The slips in that are, they're not going to be very many slips, but I'm not sure. If 750 feet is okay, then that just keeps it simpler. Again, let me go through here. We can come back to the pieces that we want to talk about. Outdoor activity, a lot of home occupations in a place like Boulder are going to have some activities outside. So we have the ability to require buffers and setbacks. They differ in each zoning district. You'll also notice that we provide for home occupations in the commercial zoning district, because in case a home gets captured in there, you want to be able to answer that question. Probably not going to happen, but this way the question's answered. You can require parking, you look at traffic generation, we got into that when we talked about development, some things like Lower Boulder Road where traffic generation could be a real problem, where there's no capacity. So the Planning Commission has a lot of discretionary power there. Then anti-nuisances, keeping the signs small, and not parking commercial vehicles. So that's what we had done up to this point for home businesses. And what would be added here, based on what you've got, is when we get to, and actually I think I have a question for you, okay?
Sure.
Let me get here. So going back to the home mechanic thing, a home mechanic would be a home business, and it could not occupy more than this many square feet, but obviously they're going to probably park a vehicle outside. And so my question to you is, does the two-vehicle limit that you have here apply to vehicles that are within the structure, vehicles that are outside the structure, to all vehicles? We need to try to clarify that.
Yeah, I think the intention was, and I don't know if it's reasonable or not, but two total, because we were thinking of sort of a home mechanic and...
Right. I'm perfectly happy to write it as total.
In other words, one car, it's, you know, obvious, you know, that you don't always have the parts on hand, so you have
right.
one car you can work on while you're getting parts for the other one.
Yeah.
But really, you know, a little home business, we're not talking about that.
Right. Well, if it's two total, then that's fine. One of them can be parked outside and then pulled into the garage when they're going to work on it, and into the shop. So, that's fine. I just wanted to be clear. Because it says here I worked on it one time, and you know the reality is that while you're waiting for parts and stuff, you're not going to be working on them in the literal
right.
sense of the word.
Right.
So I want to fiddle with the language there a little bit, but keep the concept. And so basically, when you look at that checklist, you would see a space on there that says that for mechanic services, there's a limit on the number of vehicles to be stored. That would just be another standard, it'd be another item on the checklist.
Okay.
Right. It's just one very specific item. It wouldn't apply to anything except the mechanic, right? Which is fine. If things are not applicable, you move right through them. So I'll fiddle with that. Like I said, it won't change the concept of two total. I think the work done at one time is probably not exactly how we want to say it. So that'll go over into the standards. And then, so that I'm clear on what you guys were doing, I think probably I am, that the difference between a minor and a major home occupation is that a minor has no other employees.
Correct.
Okay. So let me ask a big general question.
Sure.
Do you want home businesses to have other employees at all?
We thought it would be reasonable for some people, and that was the major. That was the distinction, yeah.
Okay. So we would add a number of employees thing to that checklist. Okay.
Right.
And then, you know, in your definition here where it talks about under the majors, it'd be hard to monitor shipping and receiving business and things like that. But the 4-square-foot sign is already in there. And so, you know, basically all these pieces like noise, vibration, light, we've already got those already on the checklist.
Right.
And so they're covered. And I think we're pretty close together on the major home occupations. Okay, so I want to be clear with you here. I think I understand what you're doing, and it's fine. What you're saying for the minor ones is that if they have any retail sales, it would be of something that they made there on the premises, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So that would go on the standards.
Okay.
Same idea that you've got, no change, just a different organization of things.
Right.
You know, I've already got a limit on vehicular traffic in the standards. we'll put the employees in there. The demand for municipal utility services. So I'm reluctant to put the shipping and receiving visits in there, just because I know how hard it is to enforce that. But other than that, I think we're good.
Is there a way to deal with that? Because, I mean, that can be an issue, right?
Well, it could be an issue. The way the standard, can you switch over to the commercial use standards memo, the last one?
Yeah.
I'll get the standard out here. We'll talk about it. We'll get it after everybody can see it.
You know, what's interesting right now is because of COVID, so many things are being shipped right now. This is really a perfect example of, you know, what could, you know, it's been such a huge change in shipping everywhere.
Right. My recycling bin is not big enough for the cardboard. We've been ordering things, and it's like, okay, we need more space, but cardboard is easy to take away in small increments. Okay, so there's the review sheet. Can you go to the actual standards themselves, to the memo, please? Sorry, we're not being clear.
We mulch our weeds with the cardboard.
So you have some type of shredder? Or do you just...
No, you just...
Plant it flat?
Yeah.
Plant it flat. I don't have any... much. We're in the forest here. And in shady places, there aren't many weeds.
Yeah.
That is...
Well, that's one a plus. Yeah.
One of the realities that... you also don't have much of a garden.
Oh, shoot.
Because most garden crops like full sunshine.
It's coming. It's coming. Hold on. I know where it is. I'm just...
Right, yeah. There's no rush. We're doing fine here. I'm getting through these questions.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, no, I mean, there isn't... I really appreciate somebody doing the work on the child care. And I have a couple more points or questions here, but they aren't big ones. And that will make it possible for me to put together a draft that consolidates all this stuff.
Well, hopefully I can answer
it. Yeah, they're questions about judgment, you know. They aren't right or wrong questions. They're like, let's just be sure that we're doing what's the right thing.
Yeah.
So...
Well, Lee, I'm having a lot of difficulty getting to what I need, what I know is there.
I know I sent it to you. Well, we all had it at the last meeting.
We all have it. I saw it a second ago. I'm not able to... Oh, I see. Never mind. I was in the wrong... Okay. Coming.
Cool.
Worksheet, home base.
So did everybody notice that Josie's having some problems?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if she's still there, but...
Let's...
I muted my monitor and I had a big option, so hopefully that fixed it.
Yeah, and I can hear you too. I can hear you.
Good. I have a puppy and back.
I think I just heard the word puppy, and that sounds like a total, I totally understand that.
Well, sorry guys, talk about something else, because it'll take me a minute here to... I can't even think of where that would have gone.
Can we try and answer some other of your questions, Lee?
Yeah, I think we should. Hey, let's talk about light manufacturing. Okay. I just want to make sure I'm clear here on the light manufacturing. The way it's set up right now is that in order to have the simplest system we can get is that manufacturer would go through the commercial use standards just like any other use, commercial use, and we would separate the the definition of the standards, and some of what you've got here, like the 25% of the floor area, is a standard. You're saying three or fewer skilled workers, and giving examples, automated machines. The definition of automated machine might get us at some point. I mean, assembly line, I got you.
Yay, okay.
Hey, there we go. So let's scroll down on that a ways, but let's talk about, an automated machine, as you guys wrote it down here, probably means like robotics, right?
I think it was an assembly line type of thing, so maybe we can
So, because of length or, a whole lot of other things can run themselves these days, can program and they run.
Right.
So I could have just like one lathe, and I think we got to think through whether that's exactly how we want to say it. Okay, keep on going down.
Maybe no sweatshops.
Just kidding. Keep going down to the standards themselves.
There's a pause here. There's a long pause between my getting there and it's arriving. Okay. More. Am I at the right place?
No, keep going. Sorry. We got to keep going quite a ways here. We've got to get down into the... This is not the current draft. This is the draft before the current draft, but for what we're talking about, it won't change. So okay. Keep going here. Yeah, keep going. Back up. A little bit. Keep going. Number nine.
Okay.
Number nine. Are the restrictions on parking or traffic generation by home businesses potential commercial uses? And that should say by commercial uses. I didn't re-edit that. Because that we start the same way with home businesses. Commercial uses are reasonably expected during parking or traffic congestion on town roads or highway 12 or have the potential to obstruct access to other properties and discourage. Potential for congestion will be determined by the Planning Commission using the scoring range and weight adopted on the commercial use checklist. And that's why we've got to get to these weights. Among other things, the Planning Commission may consider parking and traffic generated for deliveries and the possibility that the proposed commercial use will offer classes or stage events. So that's where we're at now, and it overlaps with your thinking as you expressed it here. I just didn't put numbers on those things because they're going to be different in different parts of town, and I try to avoid numbers that you're then going to regret later. The 3 to 4 deliveries a day, I don't know, how many deliveries a day does the Boulder Mountain Lodge get sometimes?
Right, well, and that's the difficulty that we're trying to discern between in a commercial zone or in particular Lower Boulder, which only has a one-way in and out road.
Right, so and that's why this was written. We were thinking, when we wrote this, we talked about Lower Boulder Road. But there are other places in Boulder where the access isn't perfect either. And so this gives the Planning Commission the ability to talk about it, including deliveries. If you want to make that a little more specific, we can try some things on for size. But this is what we have right now in the work that we have done.
So how would that pan out, though, in an actual situation that the Planning Commission
Actual situation, let's say that, I keep using a garden center as an example in these things, because a garden center is something I can see maybe, possibly would work in Boulder. There are an awful lot of commercial uses that there just isn't a population support in Boulder. But let's say I did a garden center. And think about two different locations for the garden center. one, you know, along Highway 12, down close to the, down to the west, to the southwest of the junction with Burr Trail on that property that's kind of an overgrazed pasture right now, or it's got direct access out to the highway. Does it really matter how many deliveries they have every day? Probably not. If you go down Lower Boulder Road, though, it really matters a lot, right?
Yeah.
And so, and the other thing that you guys haven't seen is that we have a proposed amendment to the general plan that talks about, that sets the stage, because one of the things that happened inadvertently whenever the general plan was done is that there was a list of traffic problem areas, and that list did not include Lower Boulder Road. So we're going to propose an amendment to add Lower Boulder Road to the list of problem areas, which then the Planning Commission would say, well, hey, we have a part of the general plan that says there's limited capacity on Lower Boulder Road, and so, you know, a use that might be acceptable on Highway 12 is not necessarily acceptable here. And as long as you're clear about your reasoning and consistent, you're going to be fine. And this gives you the You need some flexibility. Either you need flexibility or you need a million standards to cover every possible outcome. And the million standards thing doesn't work for anybody, much less for Boulder. So, and again, if this seems like you want to make it clear, we can do that. But the idea here, and then you get back to that checklist, you would come down to item 9 on the checklist. We're going to talk about how important traffic generation is. And that could vary in different parts of town or in different zoning districts. For example, if you're on the checklist and you say, well, the importance of this factor on Highway 12 would be a 1, the least important type of standard. But down in Lower Boulder Road, the importance would be a 5. It's very important down there. So we have that type of flexibility, too.
Does that weigh in on a final decision?
What happens, so take a look at this standard, set of standards here, and now we're looking at this, the commercial ones instead of the home business ones. So you're going to come down here, 9, parking and traffic. And so some of these standards are pretty obviously just absolute, like you have to have water and sewer, the utility standard up there, things like that. You have to provide some type of parking in accord with Table 3 in the ordinance right now. But some of these things, like the quality of buffering and screening, architectural questions when they come up. Some of these things, you're not saying absolutely yes or absolutely no. You're making a judgment. And so, and some things could work either way. Like with drive-throughs, you could say absolutely not, which is what the ordinance says now. Or you could say, we'll make that relative, but important. I would probably go ahead and make that one absolute and bolder. So you have the ability to weight these things in terms of their importance to you, and those weights can vary depending on the situation within the community, either by zoning district or by the road that they have access to. And so let's say that you're ticking off, go back up to the top of the list here, Peg. We'll try to get through an example super quick. Let's say that I propose Garden Center in that spot that I was talking about up there on the highway, not too far before the Burr Trail. I don't think there's a water course that runs through there, so 1A, it's not in the Mesa Tops overlay. There's no water course. You'd put it on the flats, so water slopes would not apply, no crossings of slopes or water courses. Use in natural features, you'd have to talk about whether there's an important view from that property. I can't decide that for you, but you would be able to discuss that. Retaining vegetation, there's no vegetation on it to retain, so pretty easy. Stormwater, if they build something that disturbs more than an acre, they have to comply with the state law, right? Utilities, they have to have water and sewer. Access to Highway 12, they have to get a permit from UDOT. Access to other roads would not apply in this case. Dimensional standards, they have to meet the setbacks, but you guys have pretty shallow setbacks. And so if I was building a garden center and it was, let's say, an 8,000 square foot building with some outdoor sales space, and you want it to be set back further from the highway than your minimum, which is quite small, the planning commission would have the discretion to set it back further. And then, and this is the way that we talked about how to control the scale of businesses as simply as possible, which is to say there's a maximum number of parking spaces. For a business down in the lower density residential where some businesses are allowed, 15 would be the maximum. The maximum parking in the GMU would be 50. And that would, of course, be sized in accord with Table 3 in the ordinance to your building. But the maximum size of any parking lot would be 50 spaces. The garden center, we're talking about an 8,000 garden center at 3 per 1,000, then that's 24 spaces, so it wouldn't bump into that. Land use intensity, is it compatible with what's around it? There's a question there about, is it covered the same, roughly the same amount of the lot as the surrounding businesses? Given that that's a pretty large lot, the answer is probably that it's okay. The outdoor space is set back. It allows you to set, like if I had an outdoor sales space for plants, it would allow you to set that back further than the minimum that's in Table 2. Outdoor sales coverage limits how much space can be devoted to outdoor sales. Outdoor sales frontage limits how much frontage along the road can be. And those are both by percents that I need to fill in there. But in the written version we have them. Conflict with parking. There's not going to be conflict with parking for anybody else on the side I'm thinking about, parking and traffic. On that side, it wouldn't be an issue. I would provide the off-street parking in accordance with Table 3. There's a limit on the frontage of parking, so we'd be saying, really, you need to have landscaping along the frontage, not just a sea of cars. Again, using the Boulder Mountain Lodge as an example. And that building would be a pretty different visual reality if you switched it around and put it parallel to Highway 12. And put the parking parallel to Highway 12, you'd have a much different impact with exactly the same building. So building access would be perpendicular to the main road. Architectural relief, if you have a long wall, you'd have to break it up with windows or doors, architectural features, and then there's all the anti-nuisance stuff, which for a garden center probably is not a big issue. Signs are limited according to your code right now. This doesn't change that. Operating hours. Probably not something you would have to think about limiting at that particular location. I'm using this as an example, but could be very important at other places. And then drive-in or drive-through, which you can either discourage or prohibit. So you'd consider all those things about the garden center, and probably pretty easy to put a use like that up on the highway, but if you think about putting it down Lower Boulder Road, and you get down to number 9, parking and traffic, a place with 24 parking spaces down there, they're not going to be compatible.
Right.
And so it's going to fail to comply with 9, which either means that you just fail absolutely or you lose points, depending on whether you guys decide to make it a relative or an absolute. And then I think that, well, it would fail that one and you're done anyway. Land use intensity. I would say it would probably fail 6C too, down on Lower Boulder Road. There's nothing that, I guess there's an arena down there, right? Where's, but for the most part, there are not 8,000 square foot buildings on Lower Boulder Road. Right.
And I think, the intent was, right. was to keep residential areas as residential as we
right.
can and to promote,
right.
yeah, small scale home occupation, right. but not
remote commercial. So
yeah,
there's
not.
At least a couple of these standards right there that I think would make it impossible to get an approval in a place that didn't have reasonable accessibility, whether it's Lower Boulder Road or, there's a couple other nooks and crannies in Boulder that don't have a whole lot of road service either. And then to say, along the highway where there's more access, then yeah, different things are possible. So, and what happens is that your decision, instead of everybody having to sit around and kind of do your unique calculus for each use, you go through the list. And a lot of these things are going to be irrelevant to most proposals. But for instance, if you were doing something along one of the canals, one of the ditches, or along the stream, you're retaining vegetation standard here could become very important. Say that you're going to retain a buffer of vegetation along the stream, protect that while they're doing construction. So these will fall into place with different locations. On the site that I was talking about for a garden center, you would just check these, not applicable, and move on. You might make them put some vegetation back up where there isn't any, there isn't anything there to maintain. And so you run through this, down through all these standards, checking them off one at a time. When you're done, what you have is a list of conditions saying, well, okay, they represented, for instance, on the maximum number of parking spaces, they represented they were going to have no more than 24. Boom. That's the condition of approval. They can't change it later without coming back to you. Same on the setbacks, same on all those things. So you have this long, relatively long list of conditions that automatically write themselves up for you as you go through all these different considerations about a commercial use. All the potential nuisances, you know, I don't see people doing things in Boulder that bump into some of those nuisances, but it could happen. Somebody proposed things that generated too much light or dust or whatnot. And you get through the 15 standards, the number will be a little different than that in the end, given what we're adding and changing, and you've got a decision. And, you know, the next step, if we're fairly comfortable with what we've got here, is to go through those standards that are not obviously absolute and decide whether you want to have them be absolute and bolder or relative. So there could be some trade-offs made in how the project goes. And if they're going to be relative, then to give them an importance.
So we have a question or comment, I suppose. Grouping for me would be, at some point, you know, to run through these, and when you get your decision, does it relate back and uphold that general plan? Because that's really where we were coming,
right,
the definition. Sure. So that's something that, you know, we have to experiment with.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I guess those of you who were at the workshop that we did in 2018, that's exactly what we did. Because we had a much simpler, somewhat simpler list of standards, and we took a proposed project there on the property across the road from Boulder Mountain Lodge through it to see, you know, what fit, what didn't fit, what made sense in Boulder, and what didn't. It was a much more generic list than we have now, not tailored as specifically as this has become. But what you'd want to do is get this into draft form, and really I think we're fairly close to that. And then, you know, you got two options. One is to run existing projects through it and say, well, would we approve the Boulder Mountain Lodge, or would we approve, you know, the gas station? You can take a look at your existing projects and say, well, would they get through this? Or you can say, well, let's think about what we imagine might happen. And based on our imagination, come up with some parameters for that type of project and see it. And you know, I think what I would imagine, one that I would certainly think about, is more lodging. You know, can you get an ugly, inappropriate motel through these standards? Don't really think so. Although we did talk about maybe we need to add a standard in our architecture, and that would require another work session to talk about how we do that. But I don't think you can get a particularly bad lodging place through here anyhow. And, you know, an RV park, again, that seems to me like something somebody with one of the larger parcels might be interested in doing. So imagine an RV park and run it through the list and say, hey, did it work or did it not? And then you can tinker with the list. And now, once you have the list, tinkering is easy. And the other thing about this, of course, is that while it's not intended in a specific way to be foreboding or intimidating, it is intended to say that if you want to do a development in Boulder, you got to be serious. you gotta give us the information you need to fill out this list. Right? And the planning commission is gonna need a pretty detailed, pretty thorough plan in order to say, does it comply with each and every one of these standards or not? So it provides guidance to prospective developers to say, okay, if I start running through the list and find things that I'm not willing to do, then presumably an application is not going to show up. And for people who have something in mind where they're willing to, or it's important to them, because it certainly might be, to be compatible with the existing character of Boulder, then, you know, this is their guide to how you're going to review the character. So I'm pretty comfortable with consolidating the work that's been done into what we've got. We'll end up amending things that we hadn't worked on yet. That's okay. And we'll end up splitting some of these definitions out into standards. So the list of standards is going to be revised in a handful of ways. And at that point, you know, you can have a draft. And I think at that point, there's only one question before you start doing what we talked about running hypothetical developments through it to see if you like it. The only question, and we talked about this on the 30th, is the actual architecture of buildings. And when we started this, people were telling me, and I listened to them, to don't mess with architecture very much. And I assume that probably was mostly with forethought to residential architecture, but I didn't do anything. But then when I was reading the code, and we all talked about this a few days ago, there is a standard in Chapter 10 that says buildings should not call attention to themselves or create a jarring disharmony. And we decided that writing the definition of jarring disharmony might be difficult. And
about relative, isn't it?
Yeah, well, but here's what you would do, okay? If you want to deal with architecture, and I'm neutral on this, I'll do it, you know, I'll put together what you want me to put together. If you want to deal with architecture, we would set up one more work session, and we would ask everybody who can take even a few minutes to work on it to get out their phone, take photographs, email them to PEG, and say, either this is something that I think would fit in Boulder, because it's there and it fits, or it's in some other community and it fits that you happen to be traveling through, or it doesn't fit. You know, and you could have photographs of either the good or the bad or the ugly. And we would just say, okay, how consistent are people's opinions based on their photographs they submitted, right? Because an opinion about something visual that comes in words is really hard. Whereas if you give me a picture, I got a picture, right? And so if you drive down to, let's say you go down to Escalante and take a picture of Nemo's Drive-In and say that would fit in Boulder or not, I don't know how you feel about it. One way or the other, it didn't matter. We would have that information. And then we'd have a basis to say, okay, we came in and 8 different planning commission members submitted pictures. And they were all so different that they were all over the board. We don't think we can come to agreement about what looks right. Or alternatively, which I think is more likely, they all did look alike, right? And then if we say, hey, we've got harmony in the community, we've got evidence that shows that harmony, then we can talk about the architecture of buildings. But you don't want to talk about that type of design just abstractly. You can get in big trouble. Taste and preference, and also, you know, and I've done this before with folks, and in my experience, in most rural communities, there isn't that much disagreement about what looks right and what doesn't. It just doesn't happen. I suppose there's an exception to every rule, but I haven't seen that particular exception yet. And we would just use the photographs as a database and say, okay, we identified some common elements and things here. And of course, part of it goes back to size and scale that we're talking about anyway. But if you say, hey, the color is important, or You know, the shape is important. I advise you not to get down too deeply into, you know, real architectural detailing like fenestration, the rhythm of windows, or things like that. That I don't really think that's necessary in Boulder. But if you want to talk about color and whether things glare or not, shiny surfaces, I wanted to talk about some basic things based on a, you know, an experiment of seeing what people think fits and doesn't. I think we could talk about those basic things. That would take another whole work session to get us through. So I'm going to suggest at this point, and obviously I'm having to take more questions, but it seems to me that I'm pretty comfortable with what needs to be consolidated here. And, you know, I will end up tinkering with it some and people can see either that was good or not. But I will get the definition sorted out from the standards, revise the checklist of standards, and get that out as a draft. The question is, do we have time at this point to go down through the checklist and talk about how important different things are, or do you guys need to move on with the regular Planning Commission meeting?
We don't have a whole lot on the agenda for the Planning Commission. So I wouldn't mind spending 15 more minutes on it. How does everybody else feel? 15 minutes or so? Yeah? Is that...
Okay. Let's do that. We'll see how far we get.
Okay, so I'll do my best to stick on.
Okay.
But I might be the one that has to go early.
Okay, so in order to keep track of what we're doing here, let's review the columns in the table. We got the checklist in front of us. There's the name of the standard. There's a column for some notes about standards. And then there's a column that's titled Absolute. And Absolute means that it either complies or not. And even if you comply with everything else, with the entire rest of the checklist, but you fail to comply with one absolute, the answer to the conditional use permit would be no. Okay? And that's why we have relatives, so that you can do some trade-offs when you're not sure you want to be that absolute. Relative means we're going to consider the trade-offs based on the overall, the holistic view of the plan and what you're offering the community, what do we do for the community. If we're going to do that, then we need to talk about two things. We need to talk about the weight or the importance of each of these factors. And then we need to assign points to them. So we can assign points either negative or positive and multiply times the weight and come up with a score. And if the score is negative, then the project does not go forward. If the score is positive, the project can go forward. And we're saying, what you're really saying by a negative or positive score is that we're happy with the trade-offs or we're not happy with the trade-offs, right? We're just being disciplined about that conversation. So, and 1B is a perfectly wonderful one to talk about. Water course buffer, what that standard says is that if you are proposing to develop something in commercial use that is near either the creek or an irrigation ditch or canal, you have to leave a buffer. If it's along irrigation, the buffer is up to the owner of the irrigation works. If it's along a creek, we're talking about a minimum buffer of the entire riparian area, or at least 50 feet. And so you would say, okay, that's fair. We don't want to have the vegetation stripped off the stream. We don't want to have the stream banks eroding as a result of grading from the development. We could argue about the width of the buffer if we want to, but for this purpose, I don't think we need to get into that detail. The question is, how important is that to you? Is it important enough that if they don't provide a buffer, you say no? Or are you willing to trade that off a little bit? That's really the question with all of these we go down through, is if you say, hey, them taking the vegetation out of the stream zone, out of the riparian zone along the stream, is just not acceptable, then we make it absolute. if you say, make it modify that sum, then we make it relative and give it a weight depending on the importance of that. So that's a good one to start with for people to chime in and say what they think. Is it absolute, or are you willing to trade that off?
Can you define a water course buffer?
You said water course buffer, the way I wrote it, because of the nature of
water creek.
What?
I mean water course, not buffer. I get
buffer. Water course? It's any stream or irrigation ditch.
It includes any irrigation ditch, huh?
Yes. I felt that was necessary because a lot of the good vegetation in Boulder is along irrigation ditches.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a part of the character of Boulder to have those ditches.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is like the Boulder Mountain Lodge, it's easier to use examples. Like there's a
right, exactly.
And they just got approval for two new units, and it was within about 50 feet of the ditch, but the ditch has been there for years, and it's basically lolling around it. So, but there might be other ones that are fully developed water courses that are much, much nicer and more native. Mm-hmm. So I think it's got to be relative, I guess what I'm saying. Then you assign weight based upon the quality of a water course.
Okay, we could do that.
Like that? I don't know.
I'd like to chime in on this. From the environmental effects point of view.
Okay.
Go ahead. But, you know, what we do with riparian areas typically is speak to the green line. And so the green line is that riparian vegetation that extends from that water course. And that's going to vary depending on how large that water course is. But it's going to be typical of riparian vegetation. So, like Curtis used that ditch that's just grass as an example. That's probably not going to fit, but most other ditches or water courses in Boulder will, whether it is willows, cottonwoods, and other riparian vegetation types. So for me, this would be an absolute based on the green line around that water course.
So let me ask you a question. Would it be, let's say that it's absolute along any stream, okay? I'm going to try to pick this apart a little bit here, dissect it just a little. I would say that along Boulder Creek, it ought to be absolute, okay? Along irrigation, is there any way to distinguish, or are they all pretty much equally important? I mean, I guess my memories and understanding of Boulder is maybe that there really isn't a way to distinguish. But would you say that some of those ditches are minor enough that you don't want to apply this? Or would you just say, let's apply it to all of them?
From an irrigator's point of view, really important, and most of our ditches are well established and have been here for well over 50 years, so you're looking at a pretty good development of riparian vegetation. And of course, there's going to be some scratches that people have put in to direct water where it needs to go that isn't going to apply, but you know, our major canals that we're using, they're well developed. They have very little sediment going into that ditch anymore because it has that vegetation holding it there. And that's really important.
If that's an absolute, then what you've got to get a definition that says, Josie used the term green line, I'm not too familiar with that thing. So you've got to preserve that, and then you've got to put a buffer.
The way it's written up right now is pretty much going to cover what Josie was saying. Okay. And you guys can look it up and read it, and let me know if you think that the way it's written up right now is adequate. It was my intent to do what Josie is saying, which is to take in the entire green line. And you'll note that down here there's 1D. 1D allows you to have a perpendicular crossing. Okay, so like if there's a ditch that is on the highway side of your property, and the only way you can make an effective use of your property is to cross the ditch, right, with the driveway, there is a provision to cross a perpendicular at right angles so that you don't have too much disruption of riparian area. For driveways and water lines and things like that, you just about have to have a provision to allow crossings. But other than that, I wrote it with the intent of protecting the entire green line. So,
Josie, I'm still just a little confused. what's the green line, like, on the Boulder Mountain Lodge ditch that goes to the wall?
Well, like I said, if you just have lawn that's been planted and that vegetation's been maintained and cleared since that ditch has been in it, that's a hard one because that's not a real green line where you have, you know, sod. Right.
We need to do the definition. We would need to have a distance for situations like that.
Yeah,
and just say 50 feet or some other arbitrary distance. There aren't a whole lot of situations like that in Boulder, but there are some. So, I mean, we could just do that. And then you're...
So we just have a number, a number of feet, and then...
Right.
So that tells them what they're... Okay.
Yep. And so, Lee, let me ask you on these crossings, and I agree that they're necessary because you are going to have culverts and crossings.
Right.
That's a given. But, you know, they should be hardened. They should be constructed properly. So I don't know how we can cover that in the language.
If you can take a look at the draft,
I have
see what I said,
okay.
Then
okay.
We can go from there and improve it as we need to.
So,
am I sensing that we want to make the water course buffer absolute?
I would say yes. This is Haley chiming in as well.
Okay. Gotcha. So now here's a little bit more interesting one. If you go down to 1C, moderate slopes, and the way your ordinance works, and I didn't change anything here, because what you have is just quite typical. You have two categories of slopes. If it's 30% or more,
you try to restrict
any building at all on 30% or more, which is very wise. And then there's a category that would be called moderate slopes, which goes from 15 to 30%. And so that's what we're talking about here is slopes that are over 15%, but less than 30. They are steep enough that if you take the vegetation up and get water running across them, they will erode. Perhaps significantly, depending on the soil type. Where you've got so much sand and boulder, they could really cut through the sand on a 10-15% slope, or on a 15-20% slope. A course of water will excavate sand. There's plenty of power there to do that. And so the question again is, and again, the crossings thing applies to slopes too. For practical reasons, you might have to put a driveway across or something. So there's that minor exception for practical purposes. But I would tend myself to make the moderate slopes one relative but important, just because there are properties where you might have a 15% slope that you're going to want to modify or use a little bit. Maybe in Boulder you don't have to do this. Maybe you can make it absolute and everybody will be able to make, you know, effective use of their perfect property. But I have found in a lot of places that if you allow people to make a minor tweak in a moderate slope, that maybe you can, that's a good trade-off because you might be able to get it further back the road. You might be able to do, you're never doing just one thing, right? And so you might want to be able to modify a slope a little bit, but if you want to make an absolute boulder, that's fine too. I'm not sure you have cases where that would come up as a problem.
How do you account for the difference between a 15.5% slope and a 29% slope?
Well, if you've measured enough, then you kind of begin to get into it, but it's measurable. There's easily procured handheld levels that will measure the percent of the slope. They're actually compasses that have a clinometer built into them.
I don't mean measuring. I mean, how do you deal with it in the...
Oh.
You've got a lumped up category, moderate slopes. There's a big difference between 15% and 29%. 30% is absolute no build. And
right.
So if you're on a no build, maybe you... How do you weight those? In other words, I guess if you're going to make it relative, then you build into it the degree
of... If you had it relative, let's say you made it a relative 5, so it was very important to you.
Yeah.
And I come in and I am saying, look, I've got an edge here that I need to grade in order to put in this building. and so I'm going to grade 500 square feet of a 16% slope. That's one situation. The other situation is I'm going to grade 500 square feet of a 29% slope. But the reason these categories are not something that just happened by accident, there's categories that the Oil and Soil Conservation Service, Natural Resources Conservation Service used consciously starting as far back at least when I was born. That was a long time ago. To try to lump the approximate hazard. What they're saying is that the hazard of erosion does not grow greatly between 15 and 29%. There are exceptions to that rule that we could find, but somebody had to make a decision about how you were going to deal with these things, and that's the decision that was made a long time ago and that we've, most of us have lived with when we do these things. You know, but if you make it relative, then you can say, well, we're going to give them some negative points for disturbing the slope, and that will, you know, that will kill the project unless they give us, you know, the protection of a view. Let's imagine that you're on the side of the road, slightly sloping property, going up, let's say, north of the state park, that direction, but out of the riparian zone of the creek. There are places there where there are moderate slopes. And somebody might be saying, well, I'm going to put in, let's say we'll put in a developed campsite, since we've got that definition now. In order to make it level and to get the access in there, I need to grade the base of this hill. And so you're going to say, well, the grading, you know, a certain amount of 17% slopes or 18% slopes, that's a problem. That's negative. We're going to give it minus one, since it's not a super steep slope, times the weight. So they got some minus points they got to make up. And then that same project comes down, and where could they make up the points? Well, you could say, as you get down into buffering and screening, that, yeah, we've got, you know, riparian vegetation scattered along the crop, but we're going to install more trees and more shrubs, and we might get some positive points back there. Another, where's the features? One, up at 1E, views and natural features. Let's say that on their site there was, and I'm just making this up as I go, right? But let's say they had a balanced rock, you know, a hoodoo of some type that was quite as outstanding and attractive from the road, and say, well, you know, if in the course of doing your project you don't disturb that, leave that alone, that's unaffected by the grading you do, by changes, then maybe that would be a relative and get some positive points there for preserving an important view. You could have a trade-off so that they grade a little bit of moderate slope. If they do that, they're going to lose points. They're going to have to get it back somewhere with landscaping or protecting views or, you know, things like that. So, and, I mean, the easiest thing to do, if you have doubt, is to make these things absolute. But you may, I mean, there's no guarantees, there's not only so much development going to happen in Boulder over the course of a few years, but you may run into a case where it's like, gee, I wish we could, you know, approve this, but they have a slope issue and we can't. Maybe that won't happen. So, again, I mean, the more of them that are absolute, the more straightforward this is. Making everything absolute sometimes is pretty harsh.
So I'd like to pitch in on moderate slope if I could.
Sure.
Okay, so I see moderate slope as not being an absolute, and the reason why is not so much as trade-offs. I see it as mitigation measures, and that is going to be dependent on what type of soil you have, how much vegetation is on site, and so that, you know, any type of problematic effect that might happen from disturbing that moderate slope would be mitigated. Now, that could come into a complex analysis, or it could be an engineering report, or, you know, you could throw these trade-offs in there as well, which I think are beneficial. But I don't see it as an absolute.
Well, see, if you think of it that way, what you're saying is that it helps you write a condition. Yeah, it's relative, and you say in order to not lose points here, this is how you have to mitigate your disturbance of the slope. As you say, that might be a soil engineering report or a geotechnical report of some type that says, okay, we're going to install some type of revetment or some type of blanket, or there's all sorts of things people can do.
Geo-webbing, whatever. But that would be my preference is to require a report on moderate slopes.
Mm-hmm. Under the existing ordinance, a full geocheck is required on all slopes between 15% and 30%. Yeah. And at 30, it's no bill. But that's currently in the ordinance, whether it needs looking at. And
they rely on
know that it's.
I thought that was just in the overlay zone.
No, unless I've read it wrong, but.
Well, you could be. You've read it more than I have, so you're probably.
I'm not going to stand on that lead. But yes. My impression currently, without going back and rereading it, is that any 15% to 30% slope in Boulder requires full geotech for a structural development.
Okay. Well, I will go back and, and that's one of the things, is that they're not going to put a structure on it, but they're going to grade it, say for parking or for a road. And I'll go back and read what the ordinance says and make sure I understand it. And. We'll work on that. So if you said more than 15 minutes, do you guys need to move on?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. I will work on this, and how about I communicate with Curtis, and you guys talk, I'll leave now and let you get on through the business, but you guys talk about what you want to meet next, whether you need to do it on a regular planning commission night, or if we can go back to the Tuesday night work sessions or whatever works for you guys, and Curtis can let me know.
Okay.
Before you leave, Lee, can I ask you a favor?
Sure.
Do you have time to stick around if we can do the next agenda when she opens the regular meeting? I think the first item is cell towers.
Okay. Well, I can stick around for a couple of minutes here, right? It's a little later here than it is there, as you know. I need got someone that I need to encourage to get into bed here soon.
Okay.
If I can stick around for 10 minutes.
Okay,
so we'll go ahead and close the work meeting and open our regular June Planning Commission meeting. The time is 6:21, and we have Cookie, we have Matt, we have Josie, we have Haley, and we also have me, Queen. And so the first thing we'll do is approve the June minutes. Did everyone get a look at the June minutes? I found just a couple of little errors as far as wordage. Wasn't any real big deal. I didn't know if anybody else had noticed it.
I made two change requests and provided the script from the recording to support that change on my statement. Passed that on to Ed earlier today.
Okay.
And I haven't had a chance to change. I haven't had a chance to change anything yet, but I'll get Josie's corrections, and I need to proofread. I'll hopefully catch those wording problems.
Yeah, and I can go through and find them, but there was, I think if you reread it, you'll see where that is.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So you can put faith in me and approve them pending corrections, or you can wait until next month, whatever, if you want to see them first. It's up to you.
Does anyone want to make a motion on that? So I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes for June with the corrections that Peg will be making. All in favor?
Need a second?
Second that motion.
Thank you, Matt.
Yeah.
Haley Apperson, aye.
Matt Cochran, aye.
Nelson Yuzar.
Colleen Thompson, aye. Nancy, are you there? Did you vote? Okay, we can't hear you.
Huh. Well.
Make sure he's not mute.
Yeah.
Say up or down.
Okay. Oh, up. Yeah, thumbs up. Okay, thumbs up.
Okay.
And then we have the agenda, which we have started the meeting. We'll just go ahead and go on through the agenda. Is everybody okay with the agenda?
If you want to move the cell tower discussion to the very beginning, just make that amendment.
Okay, so we'll make an amendment to move the cell tower discussion to right after the initial public comment. Can we do that, Peg?
Yeah.
Or can we even put it ahead of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We'll do it after the initial public comments then. So do I have a motion to amend the June minutes, and we'll discuss the cell power information right after the initial public comment.
Second?
I second that, Haley Atherton.
Aye, Colleen Thompson.
Aye, Matt.
Hi, Haley Opperson.
We got Cookie. Josie?
Cookie's thumbs up.
Hi, Josie, yes.
Okay, so I think that's everybody. So we'll go ahead and move on to any initial public comments. Okay, I don't think we have any initial public comments, so we'll go ahead and move on to discussion of the cell tower. And Curtis, did you want to introduce that? And
okay, I sent you an email today basically with a couple of references that Lee Nellis had provided to me. And I'd just like to turn the time over for Lee for 5 minutes so that he can quickly discuss. I don't really want to spend much time on it because we can do this by email. I don't have anything prepared for you, but as you saw from the email, there's a potential issue here that doesn't seem to be going away, but we still have time to do this perhaps. So, Lee, if you could just give us an overview on the current state of cell towers and ordinances.
I'll give you an overview, and then I'll leave the meeting and let you guys talk about what you want to do. The first thing to understand about any time you regulate telecommunications, the federal government is involved. Okay, so you might not have quite the same amount of power over cell tower that you have over other commercial land uses. The way I understand your ordinance right now, it doesn't really provide for cell towers one way or the other in a specific way. And that's a problem. I gave Curtis references to a couple of examples, which are actually fairly similar. One of them is put together by a Scenic America, which is an organization that deals with scenic issues and preserving views, and one of them is one that I put together some years ago for a town that was bigger and had more need for cell towers than Boulder does, but it includes all the right pieces. And you want to do certain things. You want to make sure that any tower that comes in allows for co-location so that you don't get multiple towers. Okay? You don't want to have another company coming in and say, hey, we're going to put in another tower. You require them to allow co-location on the tower. You require them to fence the base, to do some things, and all that's in these ordinances. They're not allowed to put up signs or to put signs on the tower. The problematic issue always ends up being height. And, you know, if you can disguise them, that's wonderful. the town that I wrote the ordinance for, there is one that's in an old dairy farm silo, and the tower just comes up a few feet above the edge of the silo. Never know it's there. But I don't think you've got a way to do that with any of the structures or things you got in Boulder. There are also a lot of other ordinances, and you'll see this if you look at the models, that say it can only rise so far above the surrounding trees. Well, in Boulder, you got pretty short trees. So I don't think you can use some of those typical, easier things. And the thing you would want to do with the building or anything usually is to say it's going to be visually absorbed. That is to say that it won't stick up above the ridge line. That's hard with cell towers because they have to stick up above the ridge line in order to have service. So you're going to have to come up with something that allows you to negotiate with a cell tower developer about exactly where it goes that it has the least visual disruption. And you're going to have to write some language along those lines of minimizing the visibility, okay, of the tower. And so where it goes in Boulder is going to make a huge difference, right? And I don't think that I know a bit about Boulder, but I would have to think about where you could find a tower that would actually be functional. I would ask them how high above the ridge of a mesa or the rim of a mesa or ridge line it has to rise in order to be effective. Because a lot of times the ordinance will say that the tower can only go 25 feet above the surrounding trees. And if you only have to have 25 feet above the ridge line, if it's up above on one of the ridge lines, then maybe it wouldn't be too obtrusive. So I think you need the basics about the base facility, those things, which you can find in those model ordinances and are pretty easy to work with. And then you're going to have to talk about where a tower can go that can be the minimum height to be functional. And the reality is that you're going to have to set yourself up to negotiate with the developer of the tower, the builder of the tower, and say, look, this is, bring us some proposals. You could write it so to say they have to bring you alternate proposals, right? Okay. That might be a good way in this particular instance to write that up. But that's the advice I can give you is that you're not going to get in trouble if you follow those models for the sort of fundamentals about co-location, things like that are basic to any tower installation, regardless of how tall or where it is. That's pretty easy. And then you're going to have to, and probably by asking them to provide alternatives for you to evaluate. That's about what you're going to have to do if they can say, well, what has the least impact, right? The proposals they bring to you. You can't absolutely prohibit cell towers. That's prohibited by the federal government. But you can regulate many of the conditions under which they exist. So that's a nutshell description. I need to sign off. I can here.
Thank you.
If there's a question before I go.
Thanks, Lee. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Lee.
Thanks, Lee.
Let me know when we're going to get together next, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, Peg, are you able to put out the email that Curtis sent out to us? Can we see that?
Yes, give me a minute.
Yeah, because did everyone get a chance to look at that email? Does anyone have any comments?
Well, I have a comment.
Okay, go ahead, Matt.
So, Curtis, it sounds like in order to have some say in what happens that we need to get ordinance passed. Is that correct?
Right. Yes. This this outfit that has the current tower has been calling with questions. I mean, sometimes they go 2 or 3 months, I hear nothing, and then they kind of come back to life. But I think what they've done is just they've hired some facilitator. I don't think it's the company itself. They've hired somebody to kind of do this, and then they kind of come in, and then she goes away. It's just it's one same person. But they seem to be getting a little more serious. I thought for a while they were just going to go away entirely, stick with what they had. But then she kind of revived it. So I was not only going to do this, I was going to talk to Steve. If they don't file, you know, I was going to talk to Steve about maybe doing a 60-day moratorium on cell tower or something like that in order to get something passed to do exactly what Lee is talking about. Not to prohibit them, but to give us alternatives, because right now they've got one of the worst locations in town, and if they decided to take advantage of this ordinance and make it, you know, seem like their first proposal was 125 feet high, which would be terrible right in the middle of the town. They're now talking about 55 to 65 feet. I just feel like we're defenseless, and so I want to kind of see if you guys want to jump on this now and start working towards something and do what we can with the mayor, et cetera. And if we put it on, if I get something to you or get Lee to help me or whatever in the next, in the short term, so you can look at it, we can notice it up for a public hearing if you're comfortable doing that for August, and then we could get it through the PC, we could do a lot of this by email to something that works, then we can to get through August and maybe through the town council by September. So anyway.
I'm a proponent for that, and I suppose if everyone agrees, then we have to make a motion to do that, or what?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure you need a motion, but if you want to, that'd be fine. In fact, if you want to just make a motion that, one of you files an application, or I can file the application, or anybody can, but to start the ball rolling, or amend, you need a formal application to amend the, you know, amend the ordinance. So.
And can we do both? Could we do a moratorium and then do a motion, you know, as far as putting that together?
The town council can do a moratorium, but the planning commission can't.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So, does anybody have any other information, anything that they have to say about this? Josie? Haley? Okay, so, Matt?
Make a motion that we proceed. That'd be good.
Yeah, so I'll make a motion that we proceed ahead with crafting, I guess, an ordinance around, or amending the existing ordinance around this, and having a public hearing on it in August, and then passing it hopefully on to the town council for more.
I'll second that. Haley Apperson.
Aye. Colleen Thompson.
Aye, Matt Cochran.
Aye, Haley Apperson.
Is Cookie raising her hand yet,
Joe? Yeah, I got kicked off again, so I'm not sure what you're ruling on.
Oh, no, go ahead.
We just made a motion to amend the ordinance on, I suppose it's on cell towers, trying to give us some control on how that happens.
Okay, copy that. Aye, Josie News.
Okay.
And I saw Cookie raise her hand. So that's everybody. Okay.
Okay, so is that it then for the discussion on the cell tower?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, good. Okay, so is Ms. Shayla, oh, there we go. Ms. Shayla's here. So we'll move on to the RSTR mapping. Did everyone get the email that Ms. Shayla sent out today?
Okay. Actually, I you want me to pull that up and I can kind of, I mean, I don't, it's probably pretty self-explanatory. There's a lot of numbers in there. Let me open that just so you can glance.
And I didn't see an actual map. Was there a map?
There's not an actual map. It's a, okay. An Excel spreadsheet detailing the information.
It's amazing.
thank you. It's so the first column is the actual dwelling. Then we've got whether it's a primary or another. And it, basically, I based that on whether they had a Boulder address or not, and then some of them in there were people that I knew that actually lived here versus not. The address that's associated with it, the zone, there are some questions. Like you can see, there's some of the Bicknell investments that are up near the Boulder King estates, and I'm not sure if those are still qualified as high density. There are a few things like the Boulder Farmstead, I'm not sure if it's commercial or not. You'll see periodically through here there's some questions basically on like places, whether the dwelling is a primary or a long-term rental or whatever. I tried to be fairly specific. These columns over to the far right, those are mostly for my benefit. So if we get a listing from Garfield County, the county recorders, Les Barker, and I think it's Cindy, somebody or other. So what I first did was locate these. I just listed them by how they come in on this parcel number. And then this page number, it's I think it's 36 pages long. So that's just informational for me to help locate it. Because as we travel down, you'll see they're not in order. Like the Headwaters is listed very first on the page one, and then the other Headwaters location is not until page 11, and so on and so forth. So I tried to go from north to south, and I'm still working through that. Upper Boulder is mostly finished in terms of going north to south, because it is mostly north to south. Then as we get to Middle Boulder, you'll see it's going to go from, and I haven't decided if you guys have a preference, working as we continue down Highway 12, and then as we get into the offshoots, I'm trying to determine how to do this the best way that's the most cohesive, and then especially into Lower Boulder. But you can see as we start into Middle, and this isn't completed, I just wanted to get all the information in before we started directionally placing them. You can see I've got two Upper Boulder locations mixed in, and that's mostly just because I was still trying to get things located, so those will get fixed. And then we've got, like, I tried to also group things together, so Boulder Creek Canyon has 1, 2, 3, 4 parcel numbers, and they're located on different pages. So once I got it all entered, I tried to like group those together. So if you see any particulars, here's a good example. Like Coombs has a lot of land, and one so far is in upper, but most of it's in the Middle Boulder section. So that's why you'll see this one down here. That's just on this first page. Again, Middle and Lower are not completely directionally cohesive yet. Then as we get to the second, third, and fourth pages, I've got them just solely by their division, by their zone. If there is another way, I mean, I didn't really give you guys too much time to look at this before I sent it out. If there's more information that would be helpful, that would be, yeah, just let me know. And I realize I need to put it on Dropbox so that you can all just view it, and I'll just alert you when changes are made. Like I said, I'm still getting this all organized. in here. And then I think in my email I stated this, but if there's a question you see and you know the answer to it, just shoot me a quick note that says, hey, yeah, I know the answer to this. That would be really helpful. That's all I've got so far.
Question.
Great.
Question. Hey, great work. So when you look at ONX or whatever program you're using, does it show you where the house, interested primary and the primary residence, does it show you which tax number it's in?
No.
So
basically, I'm using the Utah Parcels website to locate it and compare it with what I have, because there are a number of folks, as you can see, that have a number of properties, Donna Jean, et cetera, et cetera, Randy and Brenda, Black Boulder, there's a handful of others, Kelly and Yvonne, there's a number of properties, so I'm taking this number over here in the parcel number column, and I'm plugging that into Garfield County and Utah's plat mapping system, and then I'm finding it on ONX to verify that I have the right thing. And that's the other thing, in ONX, some of this acreage is slightly different. So I'm using the actual printout from the recorder's office for the acreage. If you see any with two in there, it's because of the discrepancy, but for the most part, I'm taking a recorder's office information for what it is. Also, ONX has, I think, some of the updated, because there are some owners that are listed over here on my actual printed copy that don't match what's on ONX, and they're fairly new. So I can't think of an example right now. There are just a few in here that have, okay, here's one. I just didn't know. Nacre Properties, I think that's a Scott Aho. I think that's the one over in, I think that's in middle, so I think that's that little house just north of Farland and Mary's.
It just sold to Kate.
That's what I was going to say,
And I wondered about that because I knew that there was some talk of that. And then there's some other ones further down here. So as you have some time to look through them, like I think one of them, one of the other ones is, let me see. Oh, this one, line 271. It's listed as Marie-Claude Paragon. And I think on ONX it shows that Phil and Torian are the owners of that, which I think is true.
Yep.
So I'm putting kind of both in there and with the question mark of, this is assigned to you, there's a discrepancy between the printed version and what's showing. And I know that this printed version is not super updated, and my hope is, I've contacted the recorder's office and left them a couple messages, so I'm hoping to get a newer version, just so I can verify in the long run. But I feel like column B is probably the most important thing that tells you whether, what kind of place this is, and whether there's a dwelling, and whether they're a resident. Because that's basically how we're determining our numbers and our percentages for the RSTR. So that's really been my focus. You'll see some, Randy Campbell's a really good example. He's got a fair amount of different parcels, and like this is, are, these are two lots up in the estates of Fuller King, and there's nothing on them. And because I'm not really sure where he lives, I mean, there's a lot of people in here where I know where they actually live, but there are some that I don't. As we get further down into his properties and parcels, I don't know where his primary residence is. So, Curtis, I'm going to rely heavily on you to, like, kind of verify me on these.
Now, what we'll do is, I'll make an appointment to come over for office hours.
Okay.
Before with our masks on. And
yeah, absolutely.
And then what the objective here, I think, is going to be to create another column. So you got Julian, let's just look at 120 through 123. Julian Hatch, okay, that's probably four parcel numbers comprising where he lives. So we'll create a new column, and we'll take, instead of putting primary on all of them, this will be primary residence column, and we'll mark one of them for his primary residence, because he's only going to have one. And even if you don't know which tax number it's on, it doesn't really matter. We just know he's got one house in there. And so we'll mark it as one in the middle, and we'll just go on through and identify it that way. There'll be some I don't know, but Shane Coleman knows, you know, everything for particular board. So I'll get Shane involved, and we'll get with you, and we'll go through. And this is great. This is going to give us the basis for adding a column in here, and then just go primary residence, Julia Hatch. Primary residence, 90 Brenda Campbell, you know, down. And then we can count them up, and then we can find out which of the three zones are in and do our percentages. So this is great. Thank you.
Absolutely. But like I said, I still need some more tweaking. And if anybody has any comments, I didn't forward it to the town council members, but if any that are on, I did send it to Steve. But like Elizabeth and anybody else that wants it, I'm happy to send it to you. I just felt like if you don't need it and don't want it, then you don't need it. But if you want it, great, let me know. I'm happy to. But like I said, any planning commission members, if you have any feedback or any helpful information, please send it my way.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Josie.
Okay. I just took the first few books. On the lower boulder tab, you just take work on the bottom and then scroll down, you know, and scroll on down to Sugarloaf Valley Farms. So you've got it in GMU and then a question mark in commercial, and I'm wondering why there's a question mark.
I think I did that because I know that they've got, I mean, is there anything regarding, like, the guest ranch or anything? Do I need to, does that change its qualification? Or
I think it's a use for it. Yeah, I thought it was GMU.
No, that's a use, not a zone.
Yeah, okay. So
I'll work with John, all that stuff.
Anybody else have any comments? Josie, were you talking?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone? Is that you, Haley?
I can't really see.
Are you there, Haley?
Yeah, I'm here, but it wasn't me.
Okay, so we don't have any, thank you, Peg. So we don't have any other questions? Okay, so we'll go ahead and move on. Thank you so much, Michelle. That is amazing. I think that Peg, and now let's see, Peg. I kind of wanted to go through here. I guess we'll put that on for next month.
Yes.
And then I just wanted to clarify that basically, and will we put the cell tower on for upcoming business too?
Yeah, okay. It sounds like we're going to have a public hearing scheduled as well.
Okay.
That's what you wanted, so, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, thank you. So then let's go ahead and talk about making amendment, I think is what we'll be doing as far as the general plan. To include Lower Boulder Road as I'm not sure what the wording we're going to use on that. Does anybody want to bring that up, Curtis, or I actually need to get my book on the general plan.
Sorry, I had it muted. I thought that we were going to, because we have several. As you work through the whole thing with Lee, there will be several amendments to the general plan required. There was a row of lower bolt in the row 4, the east is substandard. You could even make the argument that in Heavenly Acres, you know, there's several places that we need to look at and amend the general plan accordingly. And then there are other things that you pointed out. I can't remember them right now, but if we amend X on commercial, we've got to amend the general plan as well. So everything works together and flows from the general plan. So I don't know if we need to do that as a separate item.
Okay.
Let's definitely ask Lee how, how he and you guys want to approach that.
Yeah. Okay, so then what we'll do is, as far as discussing this general plan, what we it won't be just the lower Boulder Road. We want to look at some other roads to include in that, probably.
Right, and other amendments to the general plan.
Okay.
To support this work that you're doing on the table of uses.
Go ahead.
Can we discuss this for a minute?
Yep.
So, I know, you know, what's the intent behind the Lower Boulder Road? Is that, you know, there's, I understand that right now there's a traffic issue, meaning I think what most people want, we could take a survey on this, is we don't want more traffic. And so my concern becomes, if you put it as a trouble spot into the general plan, does that also pave the way for paving the way to make it a larger road, for example, which would be a detriment to the general plan? So what's actually going on there?
Well, my impression, and I'm going to let Lee speak to this more thoroughly, is, you know, we're not, I don't know if you can link the two. Right now, we're saying, it came about because we were talking about the appropriateness of, say, just use an example, a guest ranch that has direct highway access off Highway 12 versus a guest ranch that has access off the Lower Boulder Road. And so because it's a substantial difference in terms of impact of residential areas and so forth, traffic, the Lee's thought was that we needed to identify these substandard roads and then have that as either on his checklist, an absolute no, or a weighted thing. I'm not sure exactly how. Now, the idea that the town council at some point might say, yeah, if you want to do a guest ranch down there, and if you want to make it this big or do this and that and the other, like a subdivision, you would have to approve the entire Lower Boulder Road. That's a big issue. It's a totally separate issue. But by putting it in the general plan, let's save that question for Lee. Does that prejudice you somehow? I don't think he wants to say in there that unless and until you widen it or something, but I don't know. I hadn't really thought of that other than typically speaking, a large development, they require, in large cities, they require the developer to put in all that infrastructure, build the roads, and et cetera, et cetera. So there is an analogy to the Lower Boulder Road. Somebody wanted to do something down at the end there. So good point, and let's save it for Lee. He'll know a lot more.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, my concern would just be that the issue is not making it more accessible to traffic.
Right.
So the intent is very important.
Right.
Are you there, Cookie?
Can you?
Okay.
Cookie, can you?
We still can't hear you.
Cookie, can you type a chat?
Hey, Cookie, you can send a chat to everyone. Down at the bottom, there's a little chat bubble, and if you click on that.
Or you can call in, use the phone number.
Yeah, you can do that too.
Okay. So did that kind of answer your question, Matt?
Yeah, we'll see how Lee deals with it. So.
Okay.
I just want to be sure that we're right.
It sort of answered my question. It sounds, you know, the point of putting it on the agenda at all was what Lee had suggested was really going to be just a small addition of Lower Boulder Road into the list of roads that's in the general plan right now as problem areas. haven't actually looked at that, so I don't know the context, but it was a simple little fix. What you're suggesting now is a much larger discussion, so I'd suggest maybe we don't do it next month. Wait till we have some more information.
Yeah, but I'm just suggesting a simple little fix. We don't want unintended consequences, so we have to be careful.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And we don't want separate public hearings that are just one simple little fix. Let's deal with it as a package. If we're going to deal with roads, let's deal with all of them, and let's get a little further through this process before we... That's just one of many things we talked about.
Yeah. Cookie raised her hand, but she can't do anything. Okay.
Well, she can at least hear us. You can hear us, right, Cookie? I think.
Yes, okay.
Okay, so then we're not going to actually add this on to the upcoming business for next month then, right? We're going to kind of wait?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting from you guys.
Okay. So, we're basically, the next thing we're talking about is what we're going to be talking about next month, which is August 13th. Correct? Okay. So will you read off what we have on upcoming business?
Public hearing for the cell tower draft information, whatever it's going to look like coming up. We'll have a public hearing scheduled for whatever we end up with looking at. We're going to look more at Michela's mapping and questions being answered and so forth. That's all I have, unless there's other stuff, however you want to frame that with Lee Nellis's.
Yes, do we want to add the architectural or the next stage with Lee Nellis? Tuesday nights are a conflict for me.
If this works with you guys, I think we're out of the Tuesday meeting thing, and right?
So we'll go ahead and put that on the agenda for next month then?
Yeah, for our regular meeting, a work meeting prior, just like tonight.
Yeah.
Question.
Can we start at 6 o'clock again to give Lee a break? He's 2 hours later back there. And also to give him enough time to really start making some headway through this. I think if you're all getting a comfort level with what Lee's doing here, we can start really nailing down some things and integrating the table of use work that the work group did, and bringing it all together, and start bringing this. If we only do stuff once a month, we should at least spend some real time at it so that we can start to have something. And then strategically, you got to decide and think about and talk to Lee about, well, what's the best way to send this up? I mean, you send too much to the town council, is that going to overwhelm things? Do you want to send it in chunks that are more digestible? How do you want to proceed with this work, you know?
Yeah. I'm okay with going at 6. How does everybody else feel about that? I felt like it was okay.
Lee seems to like to stick with one-hour segments. He doesn't like to get too long in the tooth. But you'll notice we did go almost half an hour over, and people were coming into the regular meeting expecting regular meeting, and so either it's a very, you know, confined conversation that is an hour, or we start at 5:30 even, you know, it's your choice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What about that?
5:30?
Yeah, how do your PC members feel about that?
I mean, I'm just going to chime in again, like I have this entire time, like, the children's situation, it's complicated, so I can be there, always, typically, but, you know, sometimes I don't know.
You did great, Haley.
If I have someone around, you know, to help or not, so.
Yeah. Okay,
and then I feel like I can say yes, you know, but just.
I'd like to try and stick
it up.
I mean, I think we talked about
that.
We talked about last month what would happen if we moved into the Planning Commission meeting.
So is that something that we're not supposed to do?
No, you were fine.
Okay.
No, you don't have to do this as a work meeting. You can start your planning commission meeting at 6 o'clock and just seamlessly go through the planning commission meeting. First item on the agenda can be the lien notice.
Yep.
Okay.
That
sounds like a better idea to me. Like, if it's part of me.
Okay. So six o'clock, regular meeting.
Yeah.
Correct? Okay. Got it.
And Lizzie wants you all to know that she thinks the same, that she can't get her mic to work, so she called me. This
oh, good.
This is what I'm supposed to speak for Vicky.
Okay, good.
Thanks. And Josie was...
Thanks, Vicky.
Josie, was that okay with you?
Oh, yeah. No, I took the bus break, and I was just going to call her, which is ridiculous.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, good.
All right.
I got to pay a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, oh wait, Chris, I have a question before we move to the public comments, if we can.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask you, so I understand that the Boulder Arts and Cultural Center got an appeal. Can you give us an update on that?
Yes, they filed an appeal, and they got to work through, I'm required to put it together. It's very, very lengthy, a lot of exhibits and so forth, and I have to afford both the appellant and the applicant and the town due process. So exactly when they're going to be ready to respond to that, it's very voluminous, raise 11 different points, all of these things. And so I don't know when she's going to be able to schedule her attorney to review all of this and to write a brief or whatever they decide they're going to do or how it's all going to come down. So whether they'll be ready for it in August or not, I don't know. But that would be the earliest, of course, that they would be ready for it. And unless Steve wants to call a special session or something like that, or a special meeting.
And that goes to the town council, right?
Yes, the appeal, sorry. Yeah, the appeal is to the town council. They're the appeal authority. The planning commission is what we call the land use authority on conditional use permits. The town council is the land use authority on everything else. They delegated that to you guys to be the land use authority. So the appeal from the land use authority, where it's the PC, is to the TC, and if the applicant or the town is not satisfied, or whoever, then the appeal from there is directly to district court. So that's the way it flows. My job at this point is to assemble it, make it in presentable form. There is something that says that the applicant is supposed to provide all, you know, enough paper copies as required by the town. I'm not sure what the town wants to do about that. Rather than do everything digitally.
Okay. Is that good, Josie? Did you get what you needed?
I did. Thank you, Chris. I'm sorry, I had a meal for my dog park.
Okay, so, can we, I'll make a motion that we close the meeting. Cookie seconds it. Oh, I think Matt just said okay.
For public comments.
Oh, what? Well, you know what? We don't have public comments. We didn't. It's not on our agenda.
Yeah, this is final comments. Yes.
Finally allowed for them.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see it. So yeah, let's go ahead and open it up for public comments. I'm sorry.
So Josie just did. That was her public
right.
comment.
Okay.
Okay.
So we'll open it back up. I didn't mean to close it. I'm sorry.
Well?
Okay, so I'm going to make a motion to close the meeting.
Okay, and
Cookie.
I'll second that.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, Amherst and I.
Cookie. Matt, Cock and I. Josie,
and Cookie raised her thumb, and so and Colleen, I. Thank you all. It was a good meeting.
Bye.
Thank
you.
See
you next month.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Hey, Craig, do you want to stick on for a second?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
I think you probably got everyone. Let me turn my fan off really quick. It's really loud.
You know, actually, I didn't type them all down, so yes, I better. Thank you for
providing. We had 18 participants at one point. That's why I wanted to just double check with you.
Yes.
A couple
people.
Okay. Yeah, I'll count Lee. Tessa, I've got all the planning commissioners, minus, I don't know who Donna Wee is.
I assumed it was Don Ah, so I was guessing Donna Jones.
I don't think that's, she spelled D-O-N-N-A.
That's what I thought.
I think it's Donna Owens.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I was, because it was just D-A-W-N-A-W-A, like kind of a play.
She signs her EMT emails that way, though.
Oh, okay.
She just wrote
Thank you.
She responded to something to me recently. I'm going to go. Bye.
Well, that was good. Thank you. Okay, and I see Kip.
Yeah, you got Kip. You got on later, too.
And Keith and Lisa. And, Keith and Keith. And Ashley.
Ashley, Tessa, and I think Judy Drain was on for a while, too.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, she's the town council.
And Lee.
Planning.
Okay. So let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Oh, Michela. And I think the other person was my screen, who doesn't count.
Right.
So yeah, I have two sign-ins.
Yeah, I have me, you,
and Steve.
Lee Nelson, Cookie, Colleen, Matt, Josie, Ashley, Elizabeth, Steve, Curtis, Haley, Keith and Lisa, Judy, Tessa, Donna, and Kip.
Okay, got it.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Great night.
Thanks for reminding me. Have a good one.
Yeah.
I hope our internets are better tomorrow. This was really, might have been, I'm surprised it made it through.
Well, I only got booted out once, which is shocking.
Yeah.
I usually have a history of 3 to 4 times in a meeting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you were pretty solid. All right. Don't say too much.
Solid. I'm coming to the office for all of them.
Okay, good night. Good night.